The CARES Summer School Botany class was an inquiry-based class. How do plants impact the quality of our lives, past, present, and future? As humans, each one of us has a complex and multifaceted relationship with plants. Through the lens of time, students explored how the relationship between plants and humans have changed from past to present and hypothesized about the future of human-plant relationship. Students explored biological concepts such as adaptation, primary succession, competition, biodiversity, limiting factors, and symbiotic relationships with local community experts, as well as various field trips that focus on researching local plants. The students were led by Juneau School District teacher Raya Waldron and CARES student advocate Josh Deutsch. We hope you enjoy the capstone product produced by the students.
Hi, my name is Summer Smith. I am a CARES biology student. My favorite part of this course was when we went to Outer Point and listened to the sound of the hummingbirds flying. So for my story, I did it in the point of view of a hummingbird pollinating local Southeast Alaska plants.
Hello there. I am what they call a rufous hummingbird. I have a long golden neck and a beautiful green cap that sparkles in the sunlight. I flew to Southeast Alaska all the way from Florida. But the strange thing is, when I arrived here, it was still snowing. I was so cold. So, in the meantime, because I couldn't get my nectar, I've been feeding on yummy small insects such as midges and small holes full of sap made by my other pretty friends, such as Snapsucker. A few weeks later, the sun started to shine, and I finally got my nectar from delicious early blueberries and combine flowers. I love combine flowers because of their several beautiful red petals and sweet taste. They also dangle so I don't get pain in my little neck. But don't worry, I helped the flower by being its pollinator. So, in the end, I got my nectar and was an energy-filled, gorgeous hummingbird. I've always been a sweet little bird, full of energy. But when anyone comes through my territory, I turn into a grouchy, annoyed little thing. Hey, wait, there's someone in my favorite patch of lilies. You gotta fly!
Hi, I'm Calvin Zulo, and I recently took a CARES Credit Recovery Biology course. Something we touched on in class that I found interesting was genetically modified organisms and their legal and moral ramifications. So I decided to do my podcast on this topic.
Imagine you're shopping at your local supermarket, simply getting groceries. You wander the seemingly endless rows of glorious commercials and scavenging for the best deals. Perhaps you're concerned about your health or the health of your family, and you decide to check the small black and white label stuffed in the corner of the back of a cereal box where they hope you won't find it. You find the nutrition information satisfactory, and you put the box into your cart. But something that isn't on the label could potentially change your mind. The cereal in the box is a product of a genetically modified organism, or GMO. You don't know it, but most of the things in your cart by this time are. The soda, both the flour and the sugar you were going to use to make cookies, and even the milk is from a cow that lived its whole life on genetically modified feed. GMOs have proven to be an invaluable technology in the past 20 years, especially in this country. Genetically modified crops help to provide food for the 300 million people living in the United States, when only about 1% of that 300 million are farmers. This is no small feat, especially when you consider that the U.S. is also a major exporter of foodstuffs and products derived from them. In 2011, some of the fastest-growing U.S. exports were vegetable products, cotton, meat, and fertilizers. All in the top 10, all industries built on GMOs. However, they do raise some interesting questions. For example, is it okay for a company to patent an organism? At first glance, you may only see the obvious moral problem, but there are legal difficulties as well. If a farmer buys GMO seeds, is it okay for him to save a small amount of those seeds to plant next year? Monsanto, a major corporation that deals in GMOs, does not think so. They have practically ended seed saving, something that farmers have done for generations. And what happens when genetically modified crops in one farmer's field contaminate those of his neighbors, who aren't buying GMO seeds and aren't allowed to grow them? Is it okay for the company to sue those? Finally, are GMOs even regulated competently? A guest speaker from Rainbow Foods was in our biology class, and when asked, he shared that the Food and Drug Administration established in the 90s that genetically modified crops are just as safe as regular crops. But recent studies with rats have shown that, over long periods of time, living off of genetically modified food, they develop liver problems. At the same time, changing the amino acid composition of the proteins in crops to make genetically modified organisms can cause severe allergic reactions in some people. Obviously, we have a lot to figure out regarding GMOs. While a valuable technology that helps to provide food for the hungry, it does have its downsides, and the next time you find yourself in the supermarket, you may want to think about what isn't on the label.
Hi, my name is Junior Franco. I am a CARES biology student, and my favorite part of the course was going out to Outer Point and getting to look at all the old man's beard and other lichens.
As I walk deep into the southeast Alaska woods to find a good resting spot, I am dying of heat. As I walk further and further, I can feel the sweat dripping down the side of my face, my palms are sweaty, and I'm thinking, why do I have this many layers on? I look ahead and I see the sun is shining on a perfect setting place. I walk over and set my backpack down. I glance up and I see a huge tree with light green, beard-looking droops of hair on branches of hemlock. As I watch them flow in the slight breeze, I walk closer to get a more detailed look. I reach up with my hand and grab a piece of green lichen. It feels like a wad of elastic rubber bands being pulled apart. As I took my sweaters off, you would know I was in need of deodorant. I reached into my bag and grabbed my stick of deodorant and put some on. I lie down in the sun and I read the back of my deodorant case and I notice they used lichen as the main ingredient. Lichens are a symbiotic relationship between a fungus and algae that form one organism and they can't live without each other. In some lichens, they produce a substance called eucenic acid which has antibiotic properties and is found in some antibacterial creams, soap, and deodorant, like that one I just put on. It's pretty interesting that you can find one lichen in the woods that you can use to make yourself smell fresh and not like a dirty sock.
Hi, my name is Lauren Sunt. I am a CARES botany student, and this is my news podcast about the conflict between plants.
This just in, countless found dead in America's forests. A group of hikers found thousands of bodies in the forest, killed from poison and starvation.
We're not sure how many there were. Almost all of them we saw were children, less than a year old, just littering the ground.
Investigations across America have yielded the same result in every forest. The body count has been estimated into the millions, and people are in outrage. Okay, so in reality, the dead we're talking about are all plants. The truth is that plants lead a constant and brutal war against each other, where the clandestine tactics of starvation and chemical warfare, especially against saplings, is simply a part of everyday life for them. An example of this is the feud between the hemlock and the Sitka spruce. The spruce poisons the hemlock and other plants by leaching acid through its needles and roots into the soil, the spruce itself being acid-resistant. The hemlock thrives in the shade, but also takes up as much sun as possible with its wide, flat needles and large, sweeping boughs, starving out almost anything but other hemlock.
So next time you look at a tree, think about all the others it had to strangle to get where it is right now.
Hi, I'm Max McVeigh. I'm a CARES biology student. My favorite part about this course was when we went to the glacier and learned about lupines. My story is about nitrogen fixation.
A man was walking through the young woods filled with alder, cottonwood, and willow trees while on a hunting trip. As he was looking around, he noticed that he had been there a few years earlier. The last time he had been there were no trees and it had been a meadow filled with lupines and young knee-high alders, but this time it was filled with the new, towering, deciduous trees. He saw a giant buck. He raised his gun and shot. He then realized the reason that the deer had been able to live there was because of nitrogen fixation. It transformed the lupine meadow into a place with plants that deer like to eat, like the alder. The lupines have bacteria in their roots that can take nitrogen out of the air and put it into soil, helping other plants, like larger trees, to grow. This is why the hunter can go hunting there now, when he couldn't before, and it is also why forests can change plants that live there over time.
My name is Troy Orban, I'm a CARES biology student. When I went out to Outer Point, a bright orange flower looked really cool. It was the orange hawkweed, and that is what my podcast is about.
It was a beautiful day at Twin Lakes. The cars were whizzing by us on the highway and the sun beamed down on my back. A bright orange flower caught my eye.
What are all these orange daisy-like flowers?
Those are orange hawkweeds. You can tell them apart by the furry stem and the bright orange flower. They are an invasive species that came from northern Europe.
What does invasive species mean?
It means they are not native to this land and can harm the ecosystem and kill native plants, like the wild violet or the lupin that grow here and other small plants.
How do they kill native plant life and harm the ecosystem?
Invasive species harm the ecosystem in many ways. The orange hawkweed does this by forming dense colonies and taking up sunlight and soil.
Why don't we just tear them out?
You can't kill them that way because they have deep roots that will grow them back this year or next year. The only way to kill them is by poisoning them.
Why should I poison them?
Because they harm our ecosystem and kill native species that our wildlife need to survive. They can also carry plant viruses.
Hi, my name is Mariah and I'm a Carers Biology student. My favorite part of this course was learning about all the different plants and going on a field trip almost every day. And my podcast is about how plants can make you feel better.
One day, my younger sister was up coughing all night. She has a bad cold, and that prevented me from sleeping too. She looked really sick, and her throat was hurting from coughing, but we didn't have any medicine, and my parents were working. Then I remembered when I was a little girl, and if I was sick, my grandma would go out and pick Labrador tea, put it in a pot, and boil it. She brought me some with sugar or honey in it, and after drinking it, my throat would quit hurting and feel a lot better. Now it was time for me to do that for my little sister, but I didn't know where to find it. So I called my grandma, and she told me the best place to find it was a wet area. So I went out, and when I got to the bog, I felt my shoes sinking into the ground. I know it's a short plant close to the ground, so I crouched down on the ground. As I crouched down, the air against my face got a little colder, and there was a strong musky smell. On my knees, crouching down, I looked for a white flower at the top of the stem with the long, skinny, green curled leaves that are red and fuzzy on the backside. I plucked one from the plant and crushed it to smell if I had the right one, and continued to gather more to take home. I went back home and boiled some tea for her. When my sister drank the sweet tea, her throat quit hurting and the coughing calmed down. She was finally able to sleep and slept for the rest of the day. My grandma has been using this method for years with all of her grandchildren, and I would like this heritage to be passed on.
Hi, my name is Mockett. I'm a CARES biology student. My favorite part of this course was going to Twin Lakes and learning about the Japanese knotweed. My story is about this invasive species.
Our story starts in Japan, with a young man named Jim. Jim loved his plant, the Japanese knotweed, because it was so big with green leaves, like a skunk cabbage, but it wasn't stinky. This plant filled his garden, and he was so happy. Jim was moving to the beautiful Juneau, Alaska, and he wanted to bring some seeds with him, so he packed a few and took it along with him. When he arrived in Juneau, he started planting his seeds around his house, and the next month, the plant grew so well in his garden, it started to expand to other neighbors' garden. It started killing their red roses, blue violets, and other garden plants because its big leaves did not let light through them. The neighbors were mad like lions. Jim forgot that this was an invasive plant, and its invasive rank was 87 out of 100. This tells how major of a threat this plant was. The neighbors took out their weed whackers and started whacking the Japanese knotweed. But it still didn't die. It took 6 years to kill the knotweed. Now today, we are more careful on what we plant, so we don't kill our native Alaskan plants, like the blueberry and salmonberry and more.
My name is Christian Murphy, and I'm part of the CARES biology class. My favorite thing that I learned was identifying local plants. My podcast is about sundew from the point of view of a mosquito.
Well, there's a basic emotion. So is fear, hope, and acceptance. Falling all between them. I am a mosquito. You, the listener, probably hate me and my time. So you might be glad this story is true and happens on a regular basis. hunger. I zip through the forest. I zip through Amarok, Woodbend, and Devil's Claw, searching for food. When I find it, I will return to my family and bring them back to feast. Usually, this isn't the tourists, but to get to the human populated area, you must cross a various number of streams and ponds away from my home. On my way, I was stopped by a strong fragrance. It was highly alluring, and unconsciously, I flew toward it, nearing the boggy edge of a pond. I caught sight of the source. I know this plant somehow, though I can't remember where. I slowly go towards it. Its lovely smelling dew-tipped stems coming towards me. Part of me said leave, to run, but I can't resist. I'm a meter away, a foot, 6 inches. I land on the plant. I deeply inhale the almost magnetic scent coming from him. I went to move inward, but found I was unable to move. It was only then when I had realized what I had done to myself. I struggled, fear flooded my heart. Anxiety and adrenaline soon took its place. This was sundew, common in my Northeast American home. The coniferous plant clung to me. I knew death was inevitable. As I continued my struggle, it became more aware to me. I kept becoming more stuck and stuck. And as I tried desperately and frantically to escape, I knew my efforts would be fruitless. So I stopped, unable to move, coated in the sundew's digestive juices. And over the next week, it would curl in, drown me, and kill me for nitrogen and other nutrients. Accepting my fate is the way I once decided to go. Like a lot of my species, I went out with a smile, unwilling to give the sundew satisfaction.
My name is Noah McVeigh. I'm in the CARES biology course. My podcast is about primary succession.
I've been on this rock for over 200 years. I've seen it all. I was the first resident to take claim on this area. My home is practically a freezer because of the massive glacier next to me. I might only be a lichen, but I'm still very important because I produce soil for other things to grow. As I sit on my cold rock, I can see the sunrise over the mountains. As soon as they peak above them, I can feel the warmth from the sun's rays engulfing me. It was so peaceful and the landscape was so gray with bare rock, but then the mosses began to grow on all the rocks around me densely. They had taken over my quiet home. That's when the shrubs came in. They completely blocked my sun, which sucked the heat right out of me. Not too long after the shrubs got comfortable, the huge deciduous trees like alder moved in. Not only plants, but many animals had started to flourish here because of the primary succession. I have been here long enough to watch the spruce trees grow and tower over me. I might just be a lichen stuck on a rock for its whole life, but I am critical to this ecosystem. In fact, it's all here because of me.
Hey, my name is Tyler. I'm a CARES biology student, and my podcast is about the various medicinal uses of Devil's Club. About a week ago, the CARES people and myself were driving to meet a Klingon elder, Dylan Watkins, to learn about an alluring vine called Devil's Club. While driving in the car, something very unusual happened to me. I began to feel car sick, something which doesn't usually occur. The elder lives some distance from where we left, so the ride was long and my nausea grew. Finally, we stopped back at the school from where we came. I was still very sick from the hot, weary ride, and the elder began to speak. The elder pulled out several products made from Devil's Club, from salve, to oil, to edible treats. I found it hard to pay attention at first, as I was still sick from the ride, but then I tried the Devil's Club jelly. It was sweet and fluid, but not sour like grape jelly can be. About an hour later, I noticed that my nausea had disappeared. It hit me suddenly that it was the jelly from before that had made me feel better. In fact, I later went back and learned that Devil's Club products can treat a variety of illnesses, including tuberculosis, arthritis, diabetes, pneumonia, colds, and many other things. Its medicines come in a variety of forms, as nearly all parts of the spiny plant are used. In addition, the plant is found all across America, from the cold forests of Alaska all the way down to the humid woods of Florida. Thus, its medicinal prowess is available everywhere.
Hey, I'm Akina Brinson. I'm a CARES biology student that found nurse logs interesting over the past couple of weeks. We were in class and saw lots of them on the Outer Point Trail in Douglas. I really like the fact how they have tall roots sticking over the ground creating shelter for other animals.
On a bright early morning, the waves were crashing on the beach's eye, a big Sitka spruce towering over the rocks and wanted to notice these little saplings all on the earth. Hey little spruce saplings, how's it going down there? I see you're growing on all Gary. He was a 700-year-old Sitka spruce that died a couple months ago. He was the best tree that could ever live. Old Gary was so rich in nutrients that you guys will probably be just like him. You little saplings are very lucky to not have to find nutrients in the ground. Lots of the other saplings that are not living on a nurse log don't always make it. Because we live in a temperate rainforest, we trees are richer in nutrients than the soil. When you fully grow up, you will have tall roots sticking out of the ground and create shelter for other animals, like porcupines under your roots. You little saplings will probably live a long life, but when you die, you too can become a nurse log and provide your nutrients for the next generation. Just like the Lion King, it's the circle of life.
Hi, I'm Doug Pegues, and I've learned about plants in my CARES biology class and their endless fight amongst one another to live, so I've decided to make my podcast about plant warfare from the point of view from a Sitka spruce tree. Thanks for the help from Mr. Maine.
Poking out, sprouting up, looking out into a small clearing. I see nothing but other plants like me, chilling in the sun that's beaming down on us. But I'm looking over them all. I'm the only Sitka spruce, sitting tall on a nurse log that's helping me with all of its nutrients. Instead of being in a few short inches of deficient soil, I'm growing nice and tall in the hot sun, and ha-ha! I'm shading out all the other plants with my big, bushy branches. And my pine needle all around my base will burn out all the other plants with their acidity. But wait, who's that guy right there? I don't know, but he seems to be growing just fine in the acidic soil that surrounds me. And the shade that I have made. He's growing weird, too. His needles are flat and soft. His top is bowing to me. Who is this, and how is he growing here? I'm doing all I can, but you are still growing beautifully. Wait, that's a hemlock, and he's growing too tall and starting to shade me out. I need my sun, but his branches' needles are fanned out over mine, and his top is now shielding me away from the light. As time passes and that hemlock continues to shade me out, I grow fragile. My weakened roots now exposed as the nurse log is now decomposed beneath me. My old friends now becoming new nurse logs for my enemy. More hemlock are growing everywhere. Now, feeling powerless with no more fight in me, I feel myself getting older, weaker. As I look around myself, I see nothing but a forest of hemlock.
You've been listening to a series of podcasts produced by Juneau School District students enrolled in the CARES program. There were lots of community members who made this class a rich and relevant learning experience. We would like to thank the following individuals for sharing their expertise and guidance. Gus O'Malley for his lichen knowledge and presentation. Tlingit Elder Helen Watkins for sharing her knowledge of local plants and their traditional uses. Riley Woodford for his podcast expertise. Brett Dillingham for his storytelling advice and building our story portraits. David Otteson from Rainbow Foods for his expertise on genetically modified organisms. Meryl Jensen at the Jensen Olsom Arboretum for his presentation and tour. And Karen Maher and their interns at the Forest Service. And finally, thank you to K2 for studio support and broadcasting our student podcasts.